Okay, so I call the meeting to order. Kathy, oh, I guess we do the Pledge of Allegiance first.
Should've done that. Yeah.
It's not on our agenda, so I got lost. So
I can add that.
Okay. I pledge allegiance to the
To the
flag
flag of the United
United
States
States
of
of America.
and to the Republic
Republic,
for which it stands,
stand,
one nation,
nation,
under God,
under God,
liberty, and
liberty.
justice for all.
Thank you. Kathy, can you do roll call?
I can. Bill Cover.
Here.
Jeff Jones is absent. Bruce Sutter.
Right here.
John Dashner is absent. Sharon Tobias.
Here.
Dan Crosby.
Here.
Andy Rich.
Here.
Also available with us is legal counsel Andrew Ramos. Our standing committee member and lead Craig Lutz, general manager Tyler Mayo, and accounts manager Kathy Powell.
Thank you all for being here today.
You're welcome.
It seems a while since we've met. So the first item on the agenda is public comment. Does anyone have anything to say from the public? You can speak as a non-board member, just as a shareholder. Hearing none, I move that we go on to the consent calendar. So these items can be enacted by one motion, but if somebody has a question or wants to discuss any of the items, it can be removed from the consent calendar. So I would need a motion or someone to say they want to pull something off the calendar.
Kathy, can you pull up the calendar?
The agenda's up now, so.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Sorry.
There we go. Yeah, I move that we accept the consent calendar.
Second.
Is that Bruce?
Yes, it was. Yes.
Okay, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? I only heard two ayes, but...
The level of energy and enthusiasm.
Meeting reports.
So, a couple things that I have today. One's just a quick update on the progress for getting ready for the project. The county is requiring that Larry obtain a performance bond, which he has, and he should be sending me the declaration of certificate before the end of the week. Then we have, then we can finish the permit process and move forward with the Borough Court and Spring Valley jobs. Everything else doesn't require a county permit, just because it's not in the roadway. We have Delta Surveying is surveying the property pins and the lot lines to make sure we put the boxes in the right spot, install the water mains.
Tyler, we met. Lost you.
Okay, So we have Delta Surveying doing the surveying for the property lot lines and the property pins, so we know where to put the boxes and where to install the mains. He should have the surveying done by the end of the week as well.
So what boxes are we talking about?
So we have the boxes that are going to be located in Borough Court. Then we have two boxes on Spring Valley that need to be surveyed. The other surveying spot is the main that runs in between the homes from Snowflake Drive up to Del Rio.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. And then I have a couple pictures. We did finally got around to being able to repair the level gauge with tank stick. There it is when it was broken. I think most of you have seen this picture from a while back.
We can't see temporary... it. Oh. All we have is the,
So here's a picture that everybody has seen. This we had a temporary repair on, and we had to schedule divers to come out to clean the tank right after we did the repair, just in case any kind of debris when we were screwing the nipples back on went down inside the tank. So it was just kind of a tough to get everything coordinated, but we finally got it coordinated. And here's the repair that was actually made. So there's the repair that was made. The pipe got put back in place and squared up, and then we resealed the base of the pipe around the tank. We also installed a snow break around it because it was the snow that caused this level gauge to get damaged. So from here on out, hopefully that snow break keeps the major amount of snow off of that sliding off the roof. And then the other big thing that happened recently, just after we did the repair, we had the dive team out from MIT to clean tank six and the clear well at TP. This is something we have on rotation every other year. They come out and clean tank six every other year and the clear well. And then the other year that is in there, they go and clean tank four. So we kind of have them all on a rotation. I am still awaiting the report, and they give me a video recording of the dive that they do to show us any kind of damage that's being done to the tank if we're going to need to do any kind of repairs, mainly cracks in the floor, the inlet or outlet pipes rusting, the guide wires that hold the float in there if they're rusting off, and they'll give me a video in response to all that, and then we can adjust to if any of those do have to be repaired. Typically, we have to drain the tank and take it offline, which is a pretty big task, but that hasn't had to be done. And before I was here, so about 12, 13 years ago, was the last time they had to take one of those tanks offline. So that's it for my report.
Okay.
Okay, so next for the unfinished business was the enclosure for the John Deere excavator here at the office. We needed to get a permit for it, so we went to the county building department. They're saying we are going to need a commercial garage permit. We have an architect looking at the current plans of the office and seeing how he can add in the wall and the two roll-up doors. That's approximately 3 to 4 weeks out. And then after that, those plans will have to go to engineering, which are up to 4 to 6 weeks out. Then once those plans are approved by those two, we can send them off to the county to start the permit process. So needless to say, we're quite a ways out on being able to develop some sort of garage to hold the excavator in. Currently, it's still stored under the underhang at the treatment plant where it's locked up and covered. And then we have the trailer locked up at the treatment plant in a different spot.
What are you going to do when snow starts falling?
When snow starts falling, I'm going to probably bring the trailer over here and store it under our underhang here so it is kept out of the snow. And we have a tongue lock as well as a hub lock, and we can lock the trailer up underneath the underhang where it should be out of the snow for the most part.
The tractor stays?
The tractor stays there because we have it under an underhang there, and it's locked up, and we're able to cover it with a tarp. So that's probably the best place for it to stay as far as out of the weather and security-wise for the excavator.
So how does the tractor actually get started?
Well, you have to use a key, obviously, but then you have to turn on the glow plugs and turn it on after that, and it fires right up. But there is a kill switch within the back of the engine bay where you can kill the power. And typically we have that kill switch on, and then that lock, kind of like a hood on your car.
So would potential would-be thieves know where that kill switch is?
Yeah, of course, there's a potential, but I mean, there's a very unlikely time that somebody's going to go down there just to steal the excavator. It is locked behind a barbed wire fence and has security cameras pointing at the driveway where you entered.
Yeah, I asked because somewhere I saw that there was equipment stolen over in the sheep ranch area.
Somebody had their 1,000cc motorcycle stolen out of their front yard.
Yeah, I saw that.
Not an easy thing to steal. What is your best guess as to when we'll have the enclosure?
Sometime next year.
Not optimistic, not pessimistic. It'll be next spring.
At least, yeah. Okay. Going to being a commercial garage permit, that could be tricky in itself. Currently, if you build anything new, you may be required to install fire sprinklers. This building does not have any fire sprinklers. So if the county decides that they're going to require us to do that, it may have to come up with a different plan of how we're going to make an enclosure for it. I don't know right now. That's why we're basically out on the architect doing the design phase. Then you have the engineer approving the size of the beams and the shear load on the wall. Then we can move forward from there to the county, and then the county will decide what may need to be added or if what we have is adequate within those points.
Once it starts to snow, how often does that spit ever be used?
That depends, really. I mean, we'll use it for some snow removal, or when the snow builds up heavily, the treatment plant. We'll take the snow berms that we made with the snow plow and put them over the fence, so we will continue to have more room there. But unless there's a main break, it won't be used for any kind of dirt work. We try not to do any of that during the rainy season because we fall into some more regulations under the county with erosion control in the rainy season.
My question is, before, when we were in construction, had this best fire allowed the fire water board to use their property? And we're close at hand. We were going to store it next door. I'm on the board of directors of this best fire, and I think if they would be more than willing to store that vehicle, and that's a very safe place. It's occupied around the clock, and it's cyclone bent. It's just the aspect of moving it back and forth. If that would be inconvenient, but as a safety factor, it's not going to get stolen.
Just thinking, whatever happened, we need a backup plan if we just decide it's too expensive.
Right. If the cost of an enclosure becomes too high, we will have to come up with another. Looking at a steel garage and installing it somewhere over the treatment plant was another idea, but the cost of that was upwards of $50,000. Now it's a start, not including that they're going to call us a commercial entity, not a residential. So it's not like we just go purchase this and install it with a typical permit. They're going to want more from us because we're commercial.
Maybe the fire station is back up.
We have a fire board meeting, monthly meeting next Tuesday, and if you, with your consent, I will bring that up to them and ask if they would, and I know they will, but if you would like it for the members of the board, for them to decide if you'd like to do it or not to.
So Tyler, what's the height of the excavator? One of the thoughts that comes to my mind is, you know, buying a Connex box and just driving it in there.
When we lower the boom, it's approximately, I would say, 9 to 10 feet tall. I know when it was on the trailer, we measured it out at over 12. And that's why we couldn't put the trailer and the excavator under the underhang that currently exists at the treatment plant. So if it was by itself, we could possibly go that route with just a Connex. Not sure how tall they do make Connexes. I don't know if they're just an 8 foot or if they go up above that. I know the current one we have is only about 8 feet tall. So I'd have to research that through a shipping container company, whether it's Aztec Containers is who we used last time, or we go to like Mid-Country Containers. I just recently purchased one for out of my cabin. So I can reach back out to them and see if they can give me a height or the tallest one that is available. I know they do have multiple different lengths, but height is going to be, I don't know if there's different heights.
That might actually end up being the best way to go.
Yeah, no, the one that I just got, they're all 8 foot wide, and it was either an 8x10, an 8x20 feet long, or 8x40 feet long. I don't know if they offered any taller options, but I can definitely reach out to them and see what dimensions we can go for a possibility for an enclosure for that. They are quite a bit more feasible, and we would need permits, obviously, for a comp.
Well, it's probably worth looking into, because by the time the county gets, done, requiring this, that, and another thing from a design standpoint, and then fire sprinklers for, your building there, we could be well into the, $60,000, $70,000 range.
I agree.
Yeah.
Just a point of interest, if we were to go with a 20-footer, that was our White Pines Park Committee. We just bought one, a 40-footer, and it delivered was $32,000.
Okay, well, I went down and picked mine up.
Very heavy.
The trucking.
Shipping costs. Yeah.
Coming from Vallejo or Oakland, Port of Oakland.
Yeah.
It's costly.
Well, I'll look into it and get some prices.
Okay.
Thank you.
The fire station about. Yes,
if you'll give me.
Yeah, you can go ahead and check with them and see if that's a possible option. I don't know if we'll go that route just yet, but it's always good to have something extra in our pocket.
Yeah, you can ask. I mean,
yeah.
I know.
We don't need to. Yeah. You don't need to have a.
They were good about letting you store all that pipe when we were doing the reconstruction, that old station 3 down there.
Yeah.
What did we pay for the equipment again?
$40,000 for the trailer and piece of equipment.
We need to spend $50,000 to protect
$40,000. Right, and get delivered, put a pad.
So the next thing on the agenda, the unfinished business, was the holiday dinner. I did sit down with Bob Russell and scheduled a dinner date at Sequoia Woods for December 1st. The arrival time would be at 5:30, dinner time would be at 6:30, and there'll be two options on a plated dinner, and it'd be located in the upstairs banquet area. I do not have a menu currently, but once Bob gets that to me, I'll email it out to all the board members.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
How many people would attend that, or how many?
I told them approximately 24, depending on each employee, each board member, and all their spouses. So it's approximately 24.
Sounds great. Thank you. CCWD.
The question of the month throughout Arnold. CCWD proposed rate increase. So here is the proposed rate increase.
So we don't see anything except you guys.
So go back to sharing the screen.
Not that we don't want to see you, but
I will get it.
He was right up on go back where you were.
and you go to the top, there's a envelope, the CCW. There it is.
Can everybody see it now, or at least the top here? Okay. So here's the rate schedule for the increases. We are the highlighted version. We have a 4-inch master meter up at our tank 4 location. We currently do pay $3,008.86, I believe, for every 2 months. So within the their proposed change, which would go into effect October 16th to July 1st of 2024, we would see actually a decrease in our base rate, which goes to $2,784.19. After that, it increases, as it says on the top, in July 1st of 2024 to July 1st of 2025, it would increase that 18%, then 16, then 16, then 15.
So are these annual costs or monthly?
That's a bi-monthly cost. Scroll down and then we'll look at the variable rate. So this is our consumptive rate that they're proposing. We should be the non-residential since we're a commercial entity purchasing water from them. Sharon and I and Kathy had a meeting with Michael Minkler about 2 weeks ago now or a week and a half ago, and we wanted clarification on these numbers. I still haven't received anything from him, which I understand because he has a lot going on right now, but after the 13th, if these rates go into effect, I'll need clarification from him not long after that. So we know exactly what our rates are going to, but it should be in October 16th to July 1st of 2024, it would go to $2.29 per 100 cubic feet that we purchased through the meter. Then $2.71, then $3.15, $3.66, and $4.21. This is for every 100 cubic feet that we purchase through that meter.
Can we, oh, I see. Okay. You already done that. I was going to ask if we could have a calculation of the financial
impact. Yeah, so what I did here is, as the last couple of years, we've had some trouble we had to turn CCWD water off for 3 months. So using the 2022 calculations of how much we purchased through them was kind of difficult to come up with an accurate number. And then going back to 2020, that was COVID year. That was a really, really high year. It was our highest in 13 years of us keeping track of our usage. So it was very difficult to come up with a number. So the closest I have, and it's actually what we're on track for this year, was 2021. So I used the consumptive amount in 100 cubic feet that we purchased from them in 2021. It's the 25,581. And then using our current base rate, as you see in 2023, that's the $3,008.86 bi-monthly. In 2024, it will decrease for the first part of the year, but the second part of the year is going to increase. So the best way I could come up with that was average the two costs. So that's where you're seeing the $3,034.77. And you see the total for the year is $18,208. And going back to what it would cost us this year, it's $18,053.16. There's only a difference of $155.46 for our base rate. The next year, though, in 24 to 25, it's going to go up to $3,080.46 increase from the year before. So you can see how it is going to incrementally get a little larger, especially in the base rate. The second table you're looking at is using that 25,581 hundred cubic feet. And of course, these are just estimated costs. Currently, we're paying the $1.90 at the $1.90 for the amount through 2021. It came out to $54,303.90. By next year, the beginning of 2024, the beginning of this year, October till through 2024 and part of 2025, you're looking at $71,452.50, which is a $17,000 increase. But mind you, these numbers, they are going to get adjusted to some extent depending on how much water we take from them. We don't always take the minimum. Over the last few years, we have taken more than the minimum, especially in the winter months, so we can help conserve on the wells. So these figures are an estimate of what it could be. And that's, of course, if this proposal is passed. We'll know more about that tomorrow after 5:30. It starts at 5:30, but they have to sit and count all the ballots that came in. It could be 7:30, 8 o'clock tomorrow evening before we find out if this is passed.
So if I'm reading this right, in 2027, our total incremental costs are $19,000. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
How many meters do we have out there?
We have 1,720 meters.
So what's that, $12 a head or something like that, or a meter a year?
Yeah, so that's when we're looking at an increase in our cost to our current, let's just say our current base rate or our current budget of the base rate, it's about a 1% increase that we'll have to increase our amount to every year. This will be something we need to sit down as the Finance and Rates Committee, and we need to discuss what our options are, because there are a few different avenues. One would be raising our consumptive rate. Another could be obviously adding another percentage to whatever raise in our base rate we're going to be increasing the base rate by, or we look at lowering the 700 cubic foot allotment, or all three. Anyway, that's where we need to sit down and discuss it as a committee and come up with a sound plan to pass off to the board for what this is going to be if this passes. Right now, I know there's a lot of pushback from county residents, and there's no guarantee that this is going to move forward with these types of increases.
So who is the approving authority on this?
Through CCWD would be the board. So they have to go through what is in Prop 218. They have to put this out to public for 90 days. Then after the 90 days is up, if they didn't receive 50% or 50% plus one rejecting this increase, the board has to shoot it down. They cannot accept it.
Well, based on what I've seen and read, there's no way it's going to pass.
I'm with you there, Andy. I just, in preparing the board for what could happen.
Yeah, no, I understand. No, you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
So Tyler, I wanted to note two things on this discussion. One is, because Blue Lake Springs receives water by contract, it's not a Prop 218 entity. So we don't get a protest vote, unfortunately, in this. We don't get to say like the other residents do. I'd also note that the protest proceedings under Prop 218, it is very hard for residents to mount a protest, even when they're very upset about rates. In my career, you know, I do this 7 or 8 times a year. I've seen one successful protest in the last 14 years. It's very hard for them to succeed. That said, a lot of times if a protest goes beyond 10 or 15 or 20%, the board will, even though they're legally allowed to pass the rates, often they will say, okay, we heard loud and clear from the public. It doesn't make good sense for us to move ahead given that there's so much opposition. We'll reconsider this even though we don't have to. And that is pretty common, and I do see that quite a bit. But mounting an actual successful protest is incredibly difficult.
Tyler, how did they get so far behind the eight ball on this? What happened? What's the root cause for this? Because I'm sure they've got it well thought out and reasoned.
Yeah, every 5 years they have to do an assessment on what they're going to need for the next 5 years. This has been something, 1996, I believe. Is that correct, Andrew? When Prop 218 was passed?
Right.
Yeah, so this is something that they have to do all the time. Their last 5 years, they proposed it was only a 1.8% increase. And it probably has something to do, obviously, with the economy and with COVID and increased construction costs. But I really don't know without – I wasn't a part of their consulting firm that they hired to do this has come up with these numbers. They're also projecting what the cost of construction will be without even having bids yet for the certain projects. So, I mean, it gets obscured pretty quickly. I personally don't know exactly why they're needing to raise it this much. Sure. But their company doesn't have, they're not set up like we are. They don't have reserves. They don't have capital assets built up. I think they're really trying to focus on building up those assets that typically or we have in place, and they don't. So being a lot larger company, they're looking at millions of dollars that they need to make up in 5 years.
So Tyler, you hit the nail on the head. I don't know the specifics for CCWD, but when you see rates increasing 15%, 20% year over year, it's almost always because of deferred maintenance, lack of reserves, lack of a capital improvement plan, failure to fund year after year and paying as you go, and then realizing, oh no, we've got a whole bunch of stuff in the ground that's about to fall apart, and we suddenly need to raise the money to pay for it when we should have been doing that all along. That's almost always the reason, unfortunately. And it imposes a real hardship on folks versus doing normal year-to-year increases and keeping up with it, which is always the preferred method. And unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be what's happening here.
You know, Tyler and I attended the meeting in Arnold, that CCWD, the public hearing or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, at the meeting, they tried to explain that some of their projects that they had set aside or not done for a while, but in 2016 it was proposed the project would cost $4 million. Well, now it's $9.5 million. So and that was repeated throughout the presentation. And you know, obviously they deferred doing these projects. And one of the other things I thought was interesting was they said in order for them to apply for grants, they have to show, similar to what we did with the USDA, we had to show that we had a rate structure that could support the project and support paying things back. And so they can't apply for the grant unless they can show they have the rates in place. So I'm not in favor of their rate, what they're doing. I'm just, it was an interesting presentation, I will say. So
well, it's interesting, the public pushback at this time, they're already circulating petitions against this increase. There's a hue and cry from the general public, the friends I know that live in our area that have CCWD. They're very unhappy people. And you said if they have to do an election at what percent, I don't think they will get the 50%.
But is it an election or they just, you write a protest letter?
They write a protest letter, but.
Right. So you have to be proactive. And
yeah, and that's where you're not, I don't.
Half the people don't even know what's going on.
I agree with Andrew. It's going to be very difficult for them to get enough protest letters. The public workshop that Sharon and I attended, there was maybe 40 people there, and there's over 4,000 residents in Arnold. I'm not saying that all of them are here all the time, but to get the interest in the community and have 50% show up is going to be very difficult. So I won't know what to say until tomorrow or the next day probably on what our rate increase is going to look like, or our cost. I shouldn't say our rate increase, but our cost to purchase water is going to look like.
So can you remind me what's the schedule going forward? If the protest fails and the rate increase goes through for CCWD, when do we tell our members what the impact is?
We'll know after that, but the rate impact will start on the 16th of October. They will start charging these first amounts.
You already put something out in the bubbler, didn't you? Something at a high level?
Yeah, we put out a small blurb in the bubbler because we were getting quite a few calls from our community wanting to know, are they going to see a 20% increase in their rate? And of course, from what we're seeing, that's not true. We're not going to be increasing our rate by that much because of this.
Yeah, and it's almost just a blip on the radar screen as far as we're concerned, which is the good news.
Right. As far as our budget goes, we're looking at, like I say, it's somewhere around a 1% increase, depending on how much water we take. And if they actually go through with these highest amounts, that's another one that they explained to us that they need to put in for these higher amounts, because they can't go up anymore. So they're probably going to go to these amounts. I mean, who wouldn't if you have the approval to do so? But if they get enough grant funding and they're able to fund some of these other projects without having to go to ratepayers, they can reduce the amount that they're asking. And they said that they were going to go back annually to review this to see where they're at with being able to fund certain projects and repayments of loans.
So you said it's 1%. That's 1% a year for the next 5 years, basically.
So our budget increased, yes.
Okay.
Come October 16th, if this passes, we'll start paying, 30 cents more, a cubic foot, 100 cubic foot per, for anything we take. So we'll be, we won't be passing that on to our shareholders. They won't see the increase till January of whatever.
That's one thing that sets us apart from them. Our fiscal year is in January, and we'll have the budget for this in January, where we're going to see an increase right away, and we're going to see another increase in July, if that's the case. So that's where I average these to try to come up with a number that's more accurate to what we're going to need to recoup our cost for these increases.
And then refresh my memory, when do we go through the budgeting process? It's pretty soon, isn't it? The budget and then the...
Yeah, we're in the process of doing a first preliminary budget. And as we call the Finance and Rates Committee to a meeting, we'll definitely be discussing the budget and coming up with... That's basically what our rates are built around, is what our budget is annually.
But at the end of the day, it's sort of a de minimis impact on our rates.
Yeah.
That's what it seems. Let's go to the next page. I'll show you kind of where we've been at for the past few years. So since 2015 to now, we did have back there in 2016 and 2017 some really oddball stuff going on where we increased our rates by 10%, then we decreased them by 5%. But after that, if you look at it, we typically have increased our rates about 2-3% range. And I would expect to continue to see that. And we could even be up into a 4-5% increase, depending on how much of an impact we see on. And we do evaluate this annually, which I believe with how little of an impact it will be on our water company, we can make those adjustments from year to year.
I imagine just with the rate of inflation, our expenses are going to be up compared to.
Yeah, and we do. We have increased costs all over the place. I mean, everything is getting more and more expensive, from our chlorine costs, our power costs, our insurance, our accounting that we have them do once a year. Those have all gone up. Our fees are
insane.
Right.
Yeah, so we'll discuss it in the rates committee, but it seems like we should be thinking about recovering inflation, if nothing else. Otherwise, as time goes on, you wind up getting by an eight ball, and we wind up we'll never wind up in a CCW situation, but now's the time to capture the inflation and get it passed on, because every year you don't do it, you don't get it.
Yeah, and that's the goal, is just to slowly, incrementally keep adding to our rate increase and making some adjustments so we don't fall into a problem like CCWD is having. We don't want to have to increase our rates by 10, 15, or even 20%. That's going to be hurtful to the community, and we won't have anybody happy.
And Tyler, that video link you sent out was really helpful, and I watched that today. So,
yeah, that rate structure class was very helpful.
I mean, it was pretty basic, but it was still pretty refresher.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Okay, can I point out? I think there's a numbers aspect to this which we've been addressing, but there's also a presentation aspect to this, like how do you present it to the public? And I think we've seen how not to present it to the public. And so I think it bears some discussion on our side about not just what are the numbers, but how are we going to present the numbers to the tax, the payers.
I agree.
Yeah, once we have a solid number coming in and we can come up with a good percent that we're increasing by because of this, we'll need to address that to our public so they know and not just kind of get, I mean, eventually they're going to know that their rates increased by, let's just say 3 or 4%, but they should know what part of that is because of this increase. And we'll have to talk about how we're going to do our public relation part to the people in regards to this increase.
Mm-hmm. Is that presentation part of the presentation of the rates for next year, which is not going to happen until January, or do we do something before that?
Typically, we don't do presentation to the public in regards to our rate increase. It gets sent out in a treasurer letter that lets them know what our rates have gone up to and what they're going to increase by.
So we would have two parts. We would have the CCWD, then we would have the inflation, and then we could have two sentences on that, like what the, and then we could also explain that we're nonprofit and we're giving you the cost and there's not a profit in our rate structure.
Yeah.
Is why we're lower than the other people. But the inflationary one could be very informative to our shareholders. Say if you know all your supplies have gone up 15% and 20%, all your contractors, then you have a reasonable explanation that people won't argue with because they go to the grocery store and see the rate increase. So we'd have to pare it down within a charter, Yeah. So we're not make it clear we're not allowed to, gouge. So.
Yeah.
I'd rather not wait till next year's rates go out either. But
by you then, think we should do it earlier?
Yeah. I think the rumors, I'd much rather stop the rumors early than try to fix it once everyone's up.
So when does the bubbler go out again?
The bubbler would probably be published the next time it'd be in November, but to come up with an accurate rate increase, we have to finish the budget. We have to talk
we'd have to do ahead
all of the increases within the budget to be able to have, because that's what we take that number and divide it into how many shareholder meters we have out there, and that's how we come up with
the rate. Well, we'll see what we can write in there.
I mean, one thing we could do, if CCW becomes clear on October 16th, we could set out something then just saying, look, everybody, we know Arnold's in an uproar, but here's the impact on us. We're still in the budgeting process. We got inflation to deal with. We're working on it. We'll get the rest out to you. But right now, the impact of CCW is pretty small.
It's less than
which is kind of what we said, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But a lot, we say
we could be more vague.
We say it, but people don't read it. So
right.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll once we come up with a number, we'll put that out with what the rates are affecting us and how much it's going to affect into our budget. Obviously, the other stuff within the budget, we can't finalize until we finalize the budget. Typically, over the last few years, it hasn't been finalized till end of November or even into December before we finalize the budget and know exactly what our rates are going to go to. So,
It wasn't until January this year.
Yeah, it was later.
That's right.
So we
just have to be more decisive.
Yes, we can come up with and give out to the public what the effect of the CCWD rate increase would be on us, but exactly what we're going to increase to for the year would still be kind of like Craig said, on hold until we finish the budget. We're working on.
Whatever you put out in your early early communication, you have to hopefully make sure you don't have to eat your words, I guess.
Yes.
Correct. That's why we got to make sure our numbers are correct.
We knew this was a thing.
Yeah, we've been working on this for a couple of months. So,
we have to be really careful on how we throw around the inflation term as well, because, you know, if you look at the CPI and producer price index and whatnot, you know, it's not as horrible as, one feels on first blush.
I've got one more timing question. Let's say the protest is successful. Then CCWD has to come back with a new proposal to see if they can get that passed. What's the timing on that?
Another 90 days they have to wait for the public.
It'll be at least 6 months, because it'll take them 3 months to figure out.
Yeah, it takes.
Unless they already have a, unless they have a tiered.
Unless they have
already made the decision.
Have a backup.
But yeah, they
probably do.
We'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's the best way I can put it.
I think nothing would go into effect till next year, right? So.
Yeah, for us, nothing would go into effect till January 1st. But we would have everything done, or at least very, very close before that.
Right.
All right. Very good, Tyler. And Kathy.
Yep. Thank you.
Good job.
So I'm hoping the Finance and Rates Committee can meet in the next few weeks. Not to put any pressure on Tyler and Kathy, but and the rest of the committee.
we'll finish doing our little preliminary budget, which we've kind of been working out a little bit over the last week or two. And we'll go ahead and send out an email here soon and try to set up a time that works for, I believe it's Craig is the lead, Andy, Bill, and John to sit and have a meeting about this.
So as a point of order, Kathy, you need to adjust the attendance, board attendance, to reflect that John is attending?
Yes. Right now I'm having trouble figuring out one of my board packet.
Can I ask Andrew just a curiosity question here? What's the motivation for CCWD or any other water company in California? You know, if I'm on the board, I want to keep rates low so I get reelected. Obviously, that neglects the fact that I've got to replace all my infrastructure at some point. I'm going to let somebody else handle that. What's the motivation that get them to do what they should do, which is save the money for the infrastructure.
Right.
They're motivated not to do that. So why would they do that?
So if they've been presented along the way with realistic plans, realistic capital improvement plans that show that they need to replace their infrastructure over time, similar to what the water company actually got a couple of years ago with your capital assets plan, then they should be getting that motivation from that plan, because it's saying you're going to have a lot of bills coming due in the near future. You need to be saving money for that in a reserve. And that's what triggers the need to raise rates usually, along with increases to staffing costs and material costs, which are a rather small part of most budgets along the way. So despite the incentive for board members, whether it's a public board or a private board like this one, to want to keep rates as low as possible, if you're getting the good information that you need when you run a public water system, you'll see, there is a cost, and a cost that comes due over time, and rate increases are usually going to be necessary in order to fund that over time rather than paying for it all at once. Did that answer the question?
Put another way, I mean, their fiduciary duty is not to keep the rates low. It's to make sure the water company survives, right, and is able to be a viable entity.
Yeah, that's right, Craig. I would agree with that. I'd agree too that a lot of times if you have loans, as Sharon was mentioning, or grants, it's not just a fiduciary obligation to your customers, but sometimes it's a contractual obligation too to maintain your rates so that you can maintain the system and basically your asset, your water supply system, you can maintain it in good order. And so that big picture approach is what tells you, yeah, unfortunately, we got to grit our teeth and raise the rates over time when it's necessary to do so to keep up with the system.
Yeah, I think you also might want to look at the age, average age of the employees and whether or not they're looking at some type of retirement plan disaster. I don't know what they have over there, whether they have a pension or not. But some of the utilities on the East Coast, I know they were paying more in retirement salaries than they were for their employees, and they couldn't do anything with infrastructure. It kind of self-destructs. You'll see a lot of these cities when they go bankrupt, municipalities.
So moving forward, the next thing was 4B, the repeater antenna for the HOA. This was something that was brought up to us over 3 years ago. They wanted to install a repeater antenna so their radios could talk all the way down to Flying. And they came back to me and wanted to now install the antenna again, but on our tank 4 location instead of tank 6.
Who's they?
Andrew and I went through the contract that the board had approved 3 years ago that never moved anywhere. And we just changed the location and a couple parts of the terminology within the contract. And I gave it back to them. They need to approve it, the contract that we had already made for them, and sign it, and then I'll bring it before our board for your guys' approval to move forward with them installing an antenna. But until their HOA does their diligence, we're kind of on hold for that. So this was something that was on the agenda, hoping that they would get this completed before we had our next meeting, and they didn't or weren't able to. So this will be curbed for a future meeting. So next would be 4C, the report on the monthly billing, invoice, and receivables.
So we did our 4 out of 6 invoices at the end of August. The base rate that's always the same is $266,061.25. That's the base rate, the USDA residence repayment, and the USDA lot repayment. The extras was metered water, which was $7,512.81, and then interest for $1,062.51, which was billed. We also had 4 liens paid off since our last meeting. So,
most of that bring in. So, Kathy. Kathy, this is Dan. When we use the term metered water, I see it in a lot of the financial statements. All our water is metered now. Are we really saying water above the baseline?
Yeah, water charges above the 700 cubic foot allotment every 2 months.
And we probably should come up with a better name because, you know, metered water, we meter everything, so. Maybe it's, I don't know.
I can talk to Lee about that and Craig and see if we can come up with another name for that.
Yeah, you used it in a couple of the financial statements too. And it's at first glance, I was thinking, what is that for? But
yeah, that's the above allotment charges.
Yeah, maybe that's above allotment charges.
Okay.
I'm just curious, Kathy, on the liens, I think you said there was 4 liens. What was the total amount of those roughly that was collected?
About 2,000.
Oh, okay, pretty small. All
right. Yeah, they were smaller ones. The bulk of our past due accounts, actually, we have 3 that make up, I would say, $75,000 of the past due. All the other ones are smaller. They owe for a year or 2 years. So the bulk is
about 3 or 4 shareholders.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So can you pull up that page in the financials?
Which page do you want to look at?
Probably the metered water one.
You want the
past due one?
No, the past due.
Yeah. So, yeah. So you're typically your past
due. Because that number appears to be growing substantially.
So the main past due ones, the ones that have liens on them is the 123,000. And like I said, 3 shareholders owe at least 75,000 of that.
Yeah, I thought we were over 100.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, the number that troubles me is the 99 that's 60 days past due.
Those are the ones that I've been working on. Those are the ones that get the delinquent letter, then they get the 30-day notice, and then they get the lien put on when they haven't responded. But that usually about 6 months.
It takes about 3 billings before they actually get liened. Because of us calling them, sending letters, giving them chances to respond, and then they don't. Usually they don't respond until we lien them. Then they call in and they want to pay.
But yeah, with the 99, Kathy, what sort of excuses are you hearing from those folks?
Honestly, they're not responding.
Yeah.
Typically, in my experience, even when we build annually, it's the same people over and over again. They'll pay, they'll go back into current, and 6 months later, they're right back on that list.
Are these people with houses, or are they just own
them? It's a mix of both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some people don't pay attention.
Yeah.
They have the money.
That's a lot of them. They have it on, let's say, auto pay, and they cancel the credit card, and they just didn't pay attention until they finally got a lien letter in the mail. And that's what they really paid attention to. They didn't open any of the Blue Lakes letters that we've sent them.
Yeah, it usually takes the lien.
And, like, has this amount stayed pretty static over the past year or so?
It has.
And do we notify them only by letter? It depends, because we only have so many emails. We don't have phone calls. Some of them we don't even have phone numbers for. We have to contact the HOA for new updated contact information because everything's either been disconnected or that we just don't have it on file.
And they seem to be generally paying the next buckets. There's only 4 accounts in there for $250.
Yeah. Since we just did the billing, I'll wait until until the end of September to see how many of those people will pay. And then at that point, I'll be sending out more delinquent letters, 30-day notices if I've already done that with that group. And then I do have a couple that we can lien as well, and that's usually what gets them to pay is the county lien letter that shows up.
Legally, can we stick a note in their front door? Something like that?
As long as you're not harassing them.
I mean, if they just throw letters away, what about another old group?
Public shaming. Do that.
Yeah. It's,
okay. There's so many, customers have a.
What it comes down to is the Water Shutoff Protection Act came into effect right before COVID. When that came out and we couldn't just go out to lock them off anymore, these started to build up more and more over the years. That was the most effective tool always, was go out and shut off their water. If they wanted water again, they paid. Unfortunately, we don't really have that tool anymore with the legal ramifications that there could be. So it's
a lot of things.
We clean them and we wait on that money. And we have ones that pay, but we also have ones that they still don't pay. I mean, they end up selling the lot and they owe us so much in the part that they sold in the lot, they didn't take home any money. We ended up getting it because we haven't.
Will that COVID thing ever sunset, or is it just in law now and it's not going to go away?
Andrew could probably answer that better than me, but it was into effect before COVID came around.
It was. Okay.
Yep. Tyler's right. It's not going anywhere.
It's one of these equity things.
Yeah.
One of the benefits of being in California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes 12 months to evict somebody that has a good lawyer.
And it's similar to that, to shut off their water.
Well, you can't even shut off the water.
And you have to go through a very stringent process. And I don't know of any water companies that have even attempted to do that yet. So I don't, as I've discussed with Andrew, we don't want to be the model company that tries to do that for the first time in the state. So the process that we're doing is the best process that we have available to us, is pestering them, is leaning them, just trying to constantly contact them, which I know Kathy does and reaches out to.
So Kathy, of the 29 that are 120 days plus past due, how many of them have liens?
Probably about 18. I usually have between 18 and 20.
Okay.
And like some of those 29 people, they only owe for 6 months, and some of them owe for a year, and some of them owe for 2 years. There aren't very many, except for those like three. I might have 3 to 5 that are more than several years.
And their reasoning for being so delinquent are what?
Usually the bare lot is the worst one, because they don't want to pay us for anything that they don't use. So they don't pay the bill when it comes. That's probably our biggest one, bare lot.
Well, we have 2 houses that are quite high, and we've talked to one of them, and she can't pay it, and they don't want to sell it. They want to keep it in the family, and so I have no idea what's going to happen with that one. And that one's got about $35,000 to $40,000 just on that one house.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, it's been lien for probably 10 years. I don't know what to do with that, besides just making sure that the lien is current and someday we'll get paid, but someday it'll have to go to be sold.
Andrew, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we may want to take another swing and think about a shutoff policy. I think there's a way to do it. We've gotten enough distance from the heavy focus on this from a couple of years ago pre-COVID that there's probably some models that we could take a look at, Tyler, given that I agree with you. It's always been the most effective tactic, and it was seriously hampered by the shutoff law a couple of years ago. I think it'd be worth revisiting it and thinking about a policy and making sure we're compliant, but trying to use that tool again to push some of these back into the current category.
We can, and then, but just to notify you, there are a couple of them that are very high that owe us money that they're not even hooked to the main. They're still hooked to the old back main that's dead. So the fact that they haven't even hooked up to get water currently, they're not taking anything. And it would be very tough for those people to go out and lock them off, because currently they don't have water as it is.
Yeah, zero incentive for those. For those folks, the lien is pretty much your only tool. Yeah.
How many of them are there, Tyler, that are still on the...
I know of at least 2 off the top of my head. After that, I'd have to do a little more research. But I do know of 2 of the ones that are in the 120 past dues. They're not even hooked to...
Wow. That's crazy. I don't even understand that.
Yeah. Come up and live off the grid.
They don't come up.
Or they don't come up.
Yeah, they're not coming up. Yeah. Yeah.
Our final, just the reportable items, which we had fulfilled everything on this list earlier on. One was the projects. We had our special meeting to add Rivera to the project to talk about that. We did the update to the handbook in regards to the benefit changes that we had made. And the last thing was for the enclosure for the tractor, which I also was asked to get a letter, a reference letter for Ricky. And I received this one from Richie Patola and Yarnell, Jamie Yarnell, it looks like. And he has worked with Cedar Creek, and she worked over at Century 21 for quite some years and did a lot of remodeling and decks for her.
Who is RPY?
That's Bob's wife.
Richie
Bob Blakely's wife.
They're real letter.
Bradley Parrish and Yarnell. It says that. Yeah.
So what's the proposal here?
Nothing, just showing you that I received that letter for now. That was just the last part of us doing the
Who's gonna do the closure for the
This is for the guy we're gonna hire to do the enclosure. In the last meeting, board members didn't know who he was and wanted some sort of reference letters to know who he's worked for and what he's done. And this was one who dropped off about a month ago. He has a couple others that I can go back to him and get, but that was the first one he brought.
So I think as far as new reportable board items, we just have the check on the Conic storage for the tractor. Did I miss any other? I don't think so.
Checking with fire station.
Oh, fire station. I can put that down, yeah.
John does.
And I think.
My position.
So we'll put that on there for a reportable item. And
what was that item? I couldn't hear it. You guys.
So the item was for John to. Was for John to go to the fire station and ask him if it was a possibility for us to store it over the mini excavators stored over there for security for the winter.
Okay.
We're waiting on the Connex or waiting on the enclosure to be built.
Right.
And then
the only other thing I have is for the Finance and Rates Committee to meet. I don't know if that's right.
Committee to meet and discuss budget rates and CCWD increase.
We should do that.
Within the next couple of weeks. I'd like to get it done before October 1st.
I got to do it before the 27th.
Okay. So I'll update the reportable board items and get them sent out to you guys to the board tomorrow with those three additions.
Great. Thank you. Well, thank you everyone for being here and participating, and to the Finance and Rates Committee for what they're about to do. That'll be fun. Thank you for your work ahead of time. Okay, fun might not be the right word there.
Yeah,
I appreciate all your hard work.
Yeah.
The first two letters are right.
Right. You know, there's so many options, and one of the things we did talk about was, you know, if you want it, how long we keep the allotment for, so that's something for you guys to consider. If we were a larger and a public entity, we could not keep that allotment. We'd have to bill for all water used. So I like my allotment, but that's just me. So anyway. Well, thank you to everyone. And is there anything else?
I motion we adjourn. Sorry.
Okay.
So it would appear that some Connex boxes have an interior height of 9 feet to 10 feet.
Okay. Who are you seeing those from, Andy?
Connex West.
Okay. Yeah, I know the company.
Got it.
Okay. I'll look into it and see if I get a quote for that.
Great. Nice sleuthing, Andy.
What's that?
Nice sleuthing.
I'm gonna stop recording. Are we done?
Yes, I think we're done.